Michael's here on the DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the future stars of wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, you just had a Future Shock go down this past Saturday. How is everything going after the Future Shock ended and we're getting ready for a show coming up on May 31st?
Well, yeah, Future Shock should also be called Future Shock, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because, you know, unfortunately, you know, dealing with younger talent, you know, first matches, fourth matches, eighth matches, you know, everybody's going to go out there. They're going to give it their all. But unfortunately, sometimes things don't work out. So there were definitely some good things that happened. And there were definitely some other things that were like, oof, that was kind of rough. So, you know, start off, Jaden Cole made his wrestling debut in front of a raucous family and friends. And he performed very, very well against Watson. And, you know, he was the one deemed, you know, he gets Watson or Sharp, you know. Right. And it's usually that guy who's, you know, been impressive. As I said, he did the Gabe Sapolsky seminar and did a match, which was actually his first match. And he did extremely well. So it's like, okay, well, you're going to get an opportunity in front of the crowd. And, you know, he delivered. So, you know, you got to be happy with that.
Yeah. And, you know, the coolest thing about it is when you see him go against a guy like Watson, now you know that, okay, you can start trying to figure out now where his mix is with someone closer to his level, and now you start seeing the reality of it, right? Because obviously a guy like Watson is going to make you look pretty damn good. Now, how's that follow-up match? What does number two and number three look like?
Well, yeah, and that's how we learned. And then you had, you know, Warren versus Sod, and these are two very, very inexperienced people. Sanders was supposed to wrestle Warren, and Sanders has a little more experience, so you're hoping that was going to be a little better. And then unfortunately you're forced to make a change, and then you have to worry because you got two guys that are very, very young in the business who are trying to go out there and impress. And, you know, that one didn't really click on very many cylinders. You know, it was a little rough. You know, there's always going to be some spots that you're like, okay, yeah, that looked good. But overall, you know, they both needed somebody more experienced in there, to help them. And, you know, I'm the one who needs to take the blame on that. But we were a little light. You know, we had some of our little more experienced guys not available. Ricky had a show, whatever it was, you know, which stood out because, you know, C4, the Air Force guy who's very young, he got to wrestle Brandon G, and Brandon's got a lot of experience. So, you know, he's able to help facilitate things that need to be done. You know, Remy, who usually helps run the back, you know, he was working PCW that day. So, you know, fortunately, Chris Bay was around and Sugar Brown. But again, there's not enough. There wasn't enough bodies to go over certain things with everybody. And, you know, it made it a little tougher. So a few of those matches didn't get the full attention that they needed to, because all those guys, they'll sit there and they'll put together the match themselves without wanting any help. And it's like, bro, you've had like four matches. You're nowhere near good enough. And, you know, they want to go out and impress. And I understand that, but it just makes it a little harder. You know, the Royal Daddies look good together. The crowd was into them. Very much. Fallon Gray made her debut. I talked to her a little bit. You know, she just needs more experience, you know. And I told her that there were certain things that I didn't care for. But, you know, her presence was definitely there. And got a good look. And, you know, it's working hard. But, you know, where she is, you know, she was talking about maybe moving to Vegas to pick up her training. And it's like, well, it worked with Gypsy Mac, and it's working with Brittany Brooks, and it's worked with a lot of other people, not only the female wrestlers, but the Dante Kings and the JKMs and all those guys who made the move have really, you know, you see them a lot more all around the Southwest now than you did a year ago before they started in FSW. So it benefits anybody to, you know, if this is what you want to do, then, you know, maybe coming to Vegas and training at FSW with the crew that we have any single day at the training facility, man, you're going to get a lot of good work in. You know, I was there the other day. Chris Bay on Monday comes in with Brittany Brooks. And then all of a sudden, you know, and AJ's been there training with them a lot, with Fox being injured. Fox used to be the one there with them. But then all of a sudden, Luke Curtis, who just came in, and his girlfriend, Layla Gray, who works for AEW, you know, she was there, and Sharp was there. And it was like a mini class being run on a Monday with, you know, extremely good talent getting working. And then, unfortunately, we saw Zoe get a vicious injury. She was there just like probably, you know, getting ready because she knew she hadn't been on TV in a while, hadn't had really had too many matches. She's been training with Vandegrift for the last few weeks. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, she's, you know, that looked bad. But she was trying to get the work in. And now here's somebody who's been part of WWE for a few years. And the fact she wasn't on TV for a couple of months, and she made sure she was getting the work in. While people who haven't even gone anywhere in this business, it's like, oh, okay. I walk in Monday, I walk in Tuesday, I walk in Wednesday, and there's some wrestlers or wannabe wrestlers that I haven't seen yet this week. So,
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing too. First off, the one thing that, I think is really kind of key here is that, in all the years we've been doing this and all the years I've known you and I've watched you, one of the things I can say is you don't sit there and you don't Roland Alexandrum, right? You don't pitch the school as if, you know, you got to come here, you got to come here, you got to blah, 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 blah. Yeah, put the money down now, blah, blah, blah. You don't do any of that. It's like, hey, if you want to train here, this is a great place to train because of these aspects. But you never force anyone into, you know, you got to move here. You got to do this. You got to do that. Which is the fairest of, you know, business practices. And also, I think keeps that level of commitment and talent at a higher, you know, bracket, because if you're going to move out here, that's a lot of commitment, right? You're not giving false hope into the dream. You're giving them an opportunity that if they want to pursue that dream, then this is a good place to do it. And I think that that's the key between the two. And like I said, like, I'm high on Fallon. I think she's fantastic in terms of that potential. Someone like her, it benefits if she gets in here and does exactly what Dante and Gypsy did, which I was the same way on them, you know, 5 years ago. And you can see that seasoning, it just opens that door because they take it to the next level. Everyone gets impassioned about their look, their promos, their in-ring, and then booking outside and trying to build their brand. And that's what you create. And that's a plus that I think, you know, benefits those who are ready to take that step of commitment, as opposed to just go to wrestling school and become a wrestler.
Yeah, if it is, you get to go to school. It's like, you know, we people that have the money, they have tailored your views, and get the booking mixed in with the guy who done Yellow and Hammerstone and Class and Reno and Koa and that whole crew that they got there. And, you know, obviously 2-3 hour drive to train. And it was like, well, you know, another option is.
Yep. Well, it looks like we lost Joe. hopefully we'll get him back here in a second. But I think that one of the things that is key about, you know, that commitment to training is that when people want to get into the business, the idea of I'm going to be a professional wrestler, it always comes down to the fact that if you're looking to be famous, that's one thing. And if you're looking to actually learn and commit, that's another thing. The dedication, the, you know, putting yourself in a position of doing, you know, a 9-to-5 job that, quite frankly, you might have to quit. Because if you can't make training, if you can't make events, then that becomes something that you need to redo. Hey, Joe, welcome back.
Yeah, it just shot off. It was weird.
But yeah, anyway, go ahead and say what you were saying about the Arizona crew.
With the Arizona crew, obviously, that is, you know, if I'm going to recommend something in Arizona, it's going to be Dom's place. You know, in California, yeah, I'm going to recommend Santino's. It's, yeah, you know, they have a standard that seems to continually produce some of the top indie talent in SoCal. A lot of them are from Santino's. The, yeah, ones in Phoenix or the ones in Arizona are generally from Dom's school. You know, right. So as I told her, and it's like, you know, another thing is, hey, you know, find out when the next Future Shock. I could probably get you on that. But, you know, maybe if we do Future Shock on Saturday, you either figure it out, because she's friends with Brittany Brooks. And it's like, what Brittany would do is she'd come in a couple days early and train with us.
Right.
As just to get in the work with quality people. It's like, where she was training, it was a guy who's done some stuff in Arizona, you know, he's all right. But it isn't whether he's good or he isn't good. It's when you have a class of 3 or 4 people and most of them are at your level or maybe even less than you, how is she going to get better? The answer is she's not.
Right.
And it's not structured, and it's not really a school. It's somebody who has a ring and is trying to make a few bucks and charging people to do it and say, hey, I wrestle on independent wrestling shows. I'll train you. Give me $50. Give me $100. Give me $200, whatever it is. It's like, you know, we've invested time and lots of money to get to where we are 16 years later. We're no fly-by-nighter, you know. Right. And again, the Clutches, the Jacob Austin Youngs, the Chris Bays of the world who literally uprooted and moved to Vegas to train with us because they felt this is something they wanted to do, and this was their best opportunity to do it. This was going to be their best chance. Now, could Clutch, who I had known, gotten matches in Arizona? Sure, he was getting them already. But he wanted to train with better people and saw that the opportunity was better to come to Vegas. Jacob Austin Young, same thing. Chris Bay, you know, looked up our stuff. I didn't know a kid from Virginia was going to think that highly of our school.
Yeah.
To be like, hey, you know, I hear really good things about FSW. So it's like anybody who wants that opportunity, because no disrespect to the people who have rings and train people, you can only train so much. Right. And it's like where Gypsy and Dante and JKM, they came out of New Mexico, and Gino Rivera is pretty known in the Southwest.
Yep.
And I'm going to assume he's a fine trainer. You know, he knows what he's doing. So why couldn't he train? But the difference is there's a ceiling as to how far you can go there. And, you know, I'm pretty sure I heard of Dante and Gypsy and never heard of JKM. But I knew of them for a few years, and they were fine. They were okay. I didn't think they were anything great, you know. And in a matter of a year, isn't it weird that this was the year that all of a sudden they broke out and now JKM gets to be on all these GCW shows? Is it being around a whole crew of people that you're not the number one or two guy. You're not the only guy there under Dante. You're under Matt Vandegrift, and you're under Hero and Shogun and Sharp and Bodie and Damian Drake and 17 other people. And then you're fighting with the younger talent of the Demirs and the Davions and the Adrian Reigns that are all, you know, scratching and clawing, and the Mariachis who get to wrestle at fucking Dodger Stadium against Che and Tito. You know, it's like, how insane is that?
Yeah.
They're not Santino guys, so don't be putting them down as Santino guys. I heard they try to take credit for them.
Yeah, of course,
That's rude, because that's not of course, because I don't take credit for Eli Everfly or Tito or Che.
Right.
The first thing I say is those are the Santino guys.
Right. And I was going to say, of course, because Joey's going to take credit.
Freaking chaos over there.
But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and that's the thing. And again, you know, it's one thing if you want to get into this business to be quote unquote famous, or, you know, a lot of people are very comfortable at being very good in that small pocket. And, you know, they call themselves a pro wrestler, you know, in Nebraska. And that's that. That's their career. That's their life. But it's the people who really have the passion. And you can see the people who are passionate. And we just talked last week about the Suavecitos and Bret the Threat. And, you know, Dante and Gypsy are now starting to accumulate titles elsewhere. Right. You know, it's crazy that once you start that journey and the pieces are in place and you start knowing what your brand is and you work with all these good people, now you can go anywhere and work with others. And it's a lot easier than, you know, just going in there and just not knowing your place and you know, having that apprehension about things, you know, and it becomes where you're becoming a professional. And I think that's a huge thing. May 31st now, speaking of becoming a professional, we got a lot of setup going on for the anniversary show to, you know, commence here. You know, we got past Future Shock now. What are we looking at for the 31st as of right now?
Well, we're putting together some cash in the case qualifiers to go along. So Maserati is going to be wrestling Zamaya. That is match has been set. Yep. We also have Bret the Threat challenging Dante King for the No Limits championship.
Nice.
One of the first matches might be a triple threat, but right now we're looking at a cash in the case qualifier, Evan Daniels versus Adrian Rain. So, some new blood. Also, you know, I decided kind of like what I did with the Rumble match, being that, you know, the idea of being in a group, being in a tag team, being in a faction, you know, should have its advantages. But when you have a Rumble and your group comes in at number one, number nine, and number 23, the factions, that doesn't come into play. Right. So one thing we've done about the cash in the case was you could cash in on any title. You know, we've had Chris Bay cash in on a No Limits title. Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Nick Bugatti cashed in on the No Limits title when Chris Bay won.
Right.
Okay. Right. Braxton cashed in on Bodie on the No Limits. Hammerstone and Graves cashed in on the tag belts. And it's like, but one thing we've never done is have an official tag team. Like last year, Ice and Braxton happened to be in. They weren't really a tag team. They were two individuals. But this time we're having a tag team qualifying match, and it's going to be Fresco and Watson, Lights, Camera, Faction versus Sky High. So whoever wins that match, both participants will be in the cash in the case, which, you know, we always talk about, we watch these matches and there's always these alliances.
Right.
But the alliances always implode because the one individual is trying to win for himself. Right. Well, now there is a tag team in there that, you know, I guess one of them could win the cash in the case, and you know, Robbie can grab the thing and then he have the case and then tell Mondo, sorry, I'm going for the No Limits. But the idea is you would think they're a tag team that maybe this will be their opportunity. So we're going to have, as usual, it'll be a six-man, you know, cash in the case, but two of the people will be part of a tag team. So just something a little different, you know, to be in there. Bryce Saturn and Damian Desire, they're going to be defending the tag titles. Brittany and Gypsy Mac will be on hand. Okay. They're supposed to have the match at the anniversary show, but they're both there and they're eager. So I don't know what we're doing yet in that realm. You know, we do have the women's match, as I said, with Maserati, but we also have some.
Would we possibly see maybe Brittany and Gypsy have to tag before they go and have to face each other?
No, probably not, just because of the fact that we're having Maserati and Zamaya.
You gotta find two more women to
right. That really don't have anything to do with the story.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know. So you know, there's going to be like three qualifying matches. So we're still figuring it out. Jay Vidal and Bateman, they've had their issues. They're both going to be at the show on the 31st. It's possible that they're going to be part of the cash in the case qualifiers.
Sure.
You know, I guess it would be interesting if we had Bateman versus Jay Vidal in a qualifier. That would be some qualifying match.
Yeah.
But we're just trying to figure everything out, you know, for those final, you know, we still have more than a week and a half to go. So, you know, there's things in place. We'll be having the press conference that will be set up with Danny Limelight and Ice Williams to have the contract signing for their match at the anniversary show. So hopefully tickets will go on sale this week. But obviously, if you hit me up, we're taking reservations, I guess you could say, for the Sweet 16 on June 15th at the Silverton Casino. So, you know, we're excited. And, you know, for those of you who missed the ending of Future Shock, Bodie defeated Oliver Kanadeh in an enjoyable match for sure. You know, yeah. Oliver really stepped it up in that match. But what happened after that was Duke Lawrence happened to be there and decided after the match, I guess he was there to have something to say about the 31st or the anniversary show. And I guess Oliver was a little slow to get out of the ring. And I guess you could say Duke helped expedite Oliver leaving the ring. And at that point, out of nowhere, he was attacked, I guess you could say, by Bodie.
Yeah.
And I've talked with MK. He'll be there the 31st. And he is going to address Bodie and the circumstances of Future Shock. And what happened that, according to him, you know, the show was over. And Duke had a few things he wanted to say. And he was blindly attacked out of nowhere from young Bodie. So I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of sad when a 50-some-odd-year-old man has to address an 18-year-old and try to put him in his place.
Well, you know, but Bodie's no longer a boy. Bodie's a man. Yeah. He fights his own battles.
Right, which means that hopefully that leads us to seeing MK get put through a table or a door or something by Bodie, because that's what MK does best.
Yes, MK probably has the record for most put through the doors in FSW history. So,
you know, when you look at that idea of Bodie now being 18 and coming into his own now, you know, it's been a you know, four or five year build of, you know, caution and then you know, allowing him to grow and to, you know, get his moments, get the taste and mature now into someone who now everything's kind of in his hands. You know, what do you see in terms of how to make sure that he you know, he gets those opportunities and is using those opportunities to the best of his ability, as opposed to, you know, just going out there and kind of getting oversaturated and maybe, you know, used in the wrong way in other places, because, you know, he's going to have opportunities coming up now across the country, probably. You know, maybe even in a ID program or, you know, AEW. So, you know, how does someone who's 18 years old kind of process all this to, you know, make sure that they just don't squander any opportunities?
Well, I think these conversations with him had been had a while ago.
Yeah.
You know, I know I had conversations with him a while ago when he started being that young prodigy at maybe 16. And now all the local shows are trying to utilize him and get the hot commodity on their show and use him to basically put over their talent.
Yeah.
Or guys that are inferior to him. And, you know, I tried my best to explain to him and making him understand the value. Because at that time, I was very, very, let's just say, I tried to take it slow with him.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd see him in a tag with Remy, or he'd be in a tag with Sin Bodhi. And the idea was to try to protect someone who was this young. Yeah. And, you know, not expose him and not get him these, you know, make sure he's over ready. Was he ready? Yeah, for sure. But, yeah. You know, he's still growing. He's still got a lot to learn. And it's like trying to put him in situations to succeed and not, A, be oversaturated, you know, especially in a town. And you can't go to this place and that place and that place. And now you're seen everywhere. You're at that point, you're an attraction.
Yeah.
So everybody wants to be like, hey, we got that young Bodhi on our show. We got that young Bodhi on our show. And then I'll watch a clip of him getting destroyed by somebody. And it's like, there's a big difference between being destroyed by some local guy who is never going to reach what you've done at 18, then right. going to GCW and, you know, getting beat up by Mance Warner or something, you know right. what I mean? Or Joey Janela or something where you get national exposure for what you're doing. Right. The value is there. You know, now if somebody's paying you a stupid amount of money to do something, sure. But the local companies aren't paying you a stupid amount of money to get beat up by some guy that I wouldn't even put on my show who happens right. to live in Las Vegas because I don't think he's good enough. So for you to go over there for little, very little money, not even, you know, gas money, it doesn't help. But being what we've seen in Bodhi, guys like Chris Bay and Kenny King and Sin Bodhi and Remy and you know, all these guys are also probably telling him the same thing. So as time has progressed, you know, Bodhi's made it aware like, hey, you know, are we running this day? Hey, we got this going on, or I got this. I got an opportunity. And just being more aware of the business, because the yeah. business is going to eat you up. They're going to use you and throw you away. And you're an FSW guy, you know. More than pretty much anybody, because you started with me at 8 or 9 years old. So just because you see it doesn't mean everybody's going to act the way that I act towards you.
Right.
You know, I'll try to explain to your mom, or I'll try to explain to you, hey, why we're doing something and why this is and why you're not on every show at 16 or 17. Because right. we're trying to stretch it out. You know, go look at college football. That's the reason why they redshirt people.
Yeah.
You know, and in reality, if you're a running back, you don't want to play every single play for 4 years and take the extra year of eligibility, because by the time you're getting paid and you're in the pros, you know, you've taken 5 years off your career in yeah. reality, you know, and less is more. When it comes to everything in wrestling, as they say, you right. know what I mean? So it's like, you don't need to work, you know, 200 days a year right. in your infant stages when you're 16 years old. So the idea was always to have them around, be a part of things, six-man tags, whatever it was, just to, you know, ease them into things. And after a while, it was hard to, just because of the fact that I'm trying to take it easy on him and he's getting involved in all these other matches. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, if this is going to be the case, well, then at least with me, I know I'm going to give him good matches. I'm going to protect him with with people by his side or working across from him,
right,
that are going to make him better. Because it's just like, you know, putting two guys in a match. Well, in most cases, you're coming to FSW and your job is to try to impress me in your eyes, to get things, to get booked more. So what are you going to do? You're not worried about Bodhi. You're worried right. about how you're going to make yourself look good. Now, right. Bodhi's part of it, sure. But that's why you try to put him in with an Evan Daniels who you can explain to and he understands you
right.
and knows what you need. Same thing when Jaden Cole and Colin and all these guys work Sharp and they work Watson, because by me telling Colin and telling these younger kids, most of them, it's they know everything anyway.
Right.
So to make things easier, I tell Sharp what needs to be done. I tell Watson what needs to be done.
Right.
And they're the ones in control of everything. And all that person has to do is stop, look, and listen.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, this is what I need from you. Because I guarantee you, if you were the little recorder next to Colin going over his match with Bret the Threat, he probably wanted to do a million things. Well, unfortunately with Bret, he probably let him do a million things. While Sharp was like, hold on, kid, you know, and you saw it because the quality of match was better because Sharp had a directive. He was right. given an order or, you know, not really an order, but hey, Greg, hey, Watson, you know, this is what we need.
Yeah.
And it goes along with all the younger wrestlers. And just because Bodhi may have more experience than a lot of others at his age, he's still very young.
Yeah.
And when you go to that company down the road or in SoCal, you're just a talent that they're booking. Because, again, when you're going to SoCal, the odds of Bodhi beating their local guy is slim to none.
Right.
They're not worried about, okay, how are we going to put together this match, have our guy win, but make sure Bodhi looks strong. They're just right. going to put together the match. Nobody's going to sit in on it. So if it's a 26-year-old, he's going to tell Bodhi exactly what's going to happen. And if he's generous, great. And if he's not generous, oh, well, because – at 17, Bodhi's probably not, hey, I really think since I got more experience than you, bro, this is what we need yeah. to do. Bodhi's going to sit there and he's going to take it. So the more work he can get at his home promotion where we know what we got, they don't. So, you know, that's why it was a little frustrating early on when he started getting a lot of bookings, because, you know, it was just like, let's just smash the young kid.
Yeah.
And to me, that didn't really benefit him in any way.
Right. No, that makes, you know, it makes all the sense. And I think, too, the other thing, too, is you forget sometimes, too, that you're still essentially learning how to tell the stories, too. You know, you might be a very good wrestler. You might have all the, you know, all the tools, right? But still trying to figure out how to use those tools and utilize the tools. You're still learning how to become a ring general. You're still learning how to put together matches.
Right, so, and all that stuff is not happening at a wrestling show. It's all happening at training. It's happening because you can have a conversation with one of our trainers, and it's Kenny King today and Chris Bay tomorrow and Sin Bodhi the day after and TJP and people who have done so much in this business. And then you got people that are training that are walking in the door that – they're wrestling all over the place. Well, I'm pretty sure Matt Vandegrift has some things to say about maybe what Fred Rosner or Rocky Romero told him when right. he was getting started doing the New Japan stuff. And it's always learning and being there to pick that up. And when you don't go to a school and when you don't train that often, you don't pick that up. Like, we try to do critiques of Future Shock and all the stuff. But the sad part is half the young kids that are on Future Shock are never there for the fucking critiques and showing up at class that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, yeah, thankfully a Chris Bay might give you immediate feedback, but hey, you know, Chris was there for a little bit. He left. He, you know, I got to get the link for the show and then people will watch it and stuff like that. But right. There's so much time. And then other shows happen that if you don't jump on it quickly, now all of a sudden, the next show's coming on. Oh, shit. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see the match that you had that was the shits, you know, and tell you what you didn't do wrong. Or if you can't throw a fucking punch, then don't throw a punch. Try a European uppercut. Try an elbow. Try a forearm. Whatever it is. When you can't do something well, don't do it. And then practice it on your own time at training until you can master it.
Right. Right.
You know? And you know, it's not rocket science. It's like, you know, there's so many guys and then they do come to training, but then they go over their match and they want to try something they've never even tried in practice. Like, wait a second. Haven't you been at practice like 300 times in your life, yet you want to do something at the match today that you haven't tried once at practice?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you think become a good golfer? Go watch golf. Scottie Scheffler, who's the best golfer in the world, and his tee time is coming up in 30 minutes, and he's hitting 500 golf balls before the event, and he's got a 6-stroke lead into the finals. He doesn't say, you know what? I'm good. I'm just going to sit in the clubhouse and drink another brew.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the batting cage. That's why everybody goes to batting practice.
Right.
And it's like, but wrestlers think that now that they have matches, I'm wrestling Friday and Saturday. That's my training. No, bro, that isn't your training.
Yeah. Which that blows my mind, you know, that makes no sense at all.
You know, you see the guys, they start off, they're there 3-4 days a week, sometimes 5. All of a sudden they get matches and you see them once or twice, if you're lucky, twice
right
in a week. And then it comes a month later and you've seen them 4 times. It's like, dude, how do you think you're getting better? You think you're good enough because you made a show? You know, there's 20 other guys that are trying to get on the main show.
Right.
You know, I yell at Adrian Rain because he can be stupid sometimes and being, then be in the main roster. And it's like, dude, you got to be around. I don't see you enough. That's how you get good enough. You know, for a while, I'd see you come in early and you train with Vandegrift and a few others. Every time I see him, I don't see you.
Right.
You know, mariachis get a lot of work. I used to see them almost every day. I don't see them every day. Nobody has keys anymore, so you ain't getting in unless I know about it. So you're not there. Now, you could get a lot of bookings, but understand that 2 months, it may not be next month, it may not be 3 months, but 6 months and 9 months of not doing it is going to stagnate you. And not going to make you improve because there's no one there to look at you and say, hey, how long you been doing that? Yeah, don't do it that way. That kind of fucking, that don't work right. And you can't be told what you're doing wrong if nobody's seeing you doing it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what you need work on, not what you're doing right. If you're doing right, nobody's going to say a word anyway.
Right.
You know, yeah, they'll say a word if it's your second week. Oh, yeah, that was good.
Right.
But when Sky High walks in the train and they have a good lockup, nobody gives a flying fuck. They better have a good lockup. They've been doing it fucking 7 years.
And they're brothers, so they've probably been locking up since they were, 4 years old.
Yeah. Right.
No, it makes all the sense. Well, and on the other hand, you brought up Duke and Bodie confronting Duke. That's the other aspect of someone who's put in more time and is someone who is learning how to utilize the strengths of being someone who is that massive. That it, it lends itself to being able to use him as part of the stories. And I think that some guys forget that, you have certain tools that you can utilize that are unique to you. And that's your advantage of learning how to grow and use those particular things about you that make you different from other people. And I think that that's, what we're seeing in Duke right now.
Yeah, let me tell you a quick story. It was years ago, Tyshawn Prince. Okay, Jay Cash came in one day, and we had talked with Tyshawn. He was training over at Adrenaline Unleashed at the time. And they had, Tommy Misfit, Thomas Day. And I guess Braxton was young. He was training there. And they had some people. And our very first show through Kid Vegas, we ended up using Thomas Day and a few of the younger guys that they had there. Cody worked the very first show. He ended up leaving there to go here, come here. But Tyshawn, I think he was Titan or some shit. He was like this weird gladiator robotic figure or whatever it was. And I was going to bring him in. That was when we were talking about the splat pack, making him Slammy Davis Jr. or whatever we were going to do. But he was this big dude. And I was talking to him because I was at the Silver Nugget. I remember talking to him. And I was looking for something because I was driving around while I was talking. And then he was going to come in, and he never showed up for that show. And I guess the guy who ran AU was probably afraid of losing his people because he only ran like that one show, the one at the Desert Breeze or whatever it was. Yeah. And it was like the one show a year, and he would put some people on it, but that was the only show they would really do. And Tyshawn never showed up. All right. Fast forward, a little while later, Tyshawn comes down, finally frustrated enough to leave. And what we saw was Tyshawn at 6'6", 380 pounds, was trained exactly the way Thomas Day was trained. And like the move sets were kind of exactly the same.
Wow.
And we had to basically retrain Tyshawn to be the monster.
How to work big.
And, they would do a spot and boom, and Tyshawn would fall instead of, wow, it takes a fucking army to like get this man off his feet. And everybody was kind of trained equally the same. And it was just like, no. And so I remember we had his first match finally. And he wrestled this guy, Josh Carey, out of Arizona. He was part of that crew that would come up all the time. And we had Tyshawn fucking murder this guy in like 40 seconds. And I remember it was like a few people, the inner circle of, oh man, I can't believe it. You should have humbled them. And it was like, oh, so I was supposed to bring him in and have Kid Vegas beat him up and then make him a monster. It's like, right. No, that's not how it works. This guy's never really been seen before. They run one show. Nobody knows who the fuck this guy is. We have a monster amongst children here. We have Braun Strowman before he's Braun Strowman. You know what I mean? And it's like, he's a monster amongst children, basically. And this guy, I see, man, he's going to be a star, which we set up. And it was the first steel cage match ever with him and Alcatraz. And he won the title. But people felt that, you know, hey, here was this guy we can't acknowledge, and he was from Adrenaline, and we can't do this, and we can't do that. And it's like, you know what? I can only make this guy a monster once.
Yeah.
And the minute he was seen, because I always tell the story about the football players who used to, like, you know, chastise and really rag on people and bust balls. And when Tyshawn shot the look after the show, they came up to be like, hey, what's up, big man, blah, 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 and tried to be buddy-buddy and realized, you know, he's playing an angle and he wasn't, like, legit pissed off.
Right.
But it was like, oh, shit. He had these guys that are, you know, 6'3", 280, like, oh, fuck, we might have fucked up, you know, type of thing. And it's like, that's what you're trying to do. And with Duke, as you saw when he was in the tag team with Koa, I don't think Duke was ever pinned in the tag team. Koa yeah. was the guy who took the L's. You know what I mean? Because we saw a lot in Duke, but I was not very happy with his work ethic. I didn't see him enough, and I didn't feel he took advantage of what his skill set was, because I didn't think he had the best training. Because as I told the story about Duke wrestling Principe Leon, and when I watched a match, and it took him like 13 minutes, literally, to beat the guy who was 170 pounds, lucha guy. And it was like, I get it, you want to have competitive matches, but that's not the match for that guy. It's like, you have to make him special, so when somebody else does beat him, it actually meant something.
Right. Yep. Absolutely.
You know, it was kind of like the idea with Cross. It was like, well, if you put Cross on TV and he has a 9-minute match with Drew Gulak, who hasn't beaten anybody, or he wrestles Tozawa and it goes 11 minutes, why is anybody going to take him seriously when he puts a clock next to Drew McIntyre or Roman Reigns and it's like, I'm coming after you? And it's like, wait a second. That guy just lost to Dragon Lee on Main Event. Like, why would I take him serious? Perception is everything in wrestling. Everything. You know, you can write a guy off of TV for a month and bring him back and kill everybody, and people believe he's a killer, even though he could have lost to Hornswoggle 2 months before.
Yeah, it's but that's, you know, and that's the thing too. You know, I think what's interesting, you know, you mentioned Zoe, and what I found really frustrating was reading some comments about how she, as if the injury was her fault, right? And it's really strange to me because, like you said, you know, you don't have a match on TV in a while. You stay prepared. You stay ready. Like you compare it to swinging in the batting cages, right? You stay ready. And then what the armchair quarterbacks like to do is come up with this insane idea. They've never done it. They've never, you know, maybe not even physically participated in sports in some cases in their lives, right?
Well, most cases, yeah.
Yeah, and yet have the gall to just pick apart. Oh, well, you know, you didn't land that drop kick right, and it's your fault. And it's like, what are you talking about, man? And that's the thing. And it's like, you know, you wait for those moments because when you get that opportunity, you have had that freshness of cleaning the slate when you haven't been on TV in a while. So now when you come back, that's your opportunity to showcase. And, you know, when you are going in there with people who are at the top of their game, you have to be at the top of your game.
And let's, you know, not sugarcoat anything. Lacey was there to take the pin in the match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. So she knew she's taking the pin, but in turn, they were going to give her a chance to shine. So she wants to go out there and show, hey, don't forget about me. Okay. I can do some really good shit. You know, yep. I know you're bringing in people and you know, because there's no way they're having the person who hasn't been there in a year walking in to take the pin.
Yeah.
So, which was kind of like, oh shit, now she's got to take the pin. In that situation, you knew Becky Lynch, whatever, is gonna get the win in the match. You know what I mean? And there's a possibility.
That was she was in with Rhea and Kairi Sane.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, Ripley. Yeah. The other top person.
Right.
So exactly. The only possible outcome is the one who's been injured is gonna win, but Lacey's still taking the pin. Because Rhea Ripley is going to be feuding with somebody else, right. Kind of like what they did in the other match
with Becky. Yeah.
Right. So Becky Lynch loses without losing because she's still working the program with somebody else. So they don't need her to be in the cash in the case. And then they give Roxanne Perez the comeuppance and she wins. Okay. But they're probably not going to do that two matches in a row. Rhea is going to be the most popular. They probably want her in that match. But either way, it's Lacey's job to take the pin in that match. Yep. But we're going to let her shine and look good against Rhea Ripley, that if they had an eight-minute singles match, Rhea Ripley would have won strong. But in the triple threat, Lacey can do all the cool stuff that people know she's a good wrestler, an excellent wrestler. So, you know, and then she gets fucked up. So now they had to go to the other finish. And now the person that hadn't gone for a year, who they probably don't want to lose yet, has no choice but has to lose.
Right.
But thankfully, it's against Rhea Ripley. So nobody's like, oh, my God, I can't believe she lost to her.
Right. And the thing, too, that, again, you know, talking about what you can learn from watching these scenarios as a student of the game is the fact that, man, she still looks strong, even though they had to now on the fly change things up. And they had to on the fly change things up, too. So now they're calling stuff in the ring.
Well, they had a minute to talk while they were walking Lacey to the back, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, but again, that's like, you know, we
imagine that in wrestling in 1985, stopping everything and doing everything they did. It's crazy.
No, no, not in fact, you know, Lacey would have probably been limping in the ring on a torn ACL.
Pretty much. And it's funny. It's like, hey, everybody, Karrion Kross, we're going to put his shirts on there and then we're not even going to have him any part of the show whatsoever.
No, It's crazy to think that there's all these moving parts going on and things like that happening. And at the same time, you know, it's like what's going on? As long as he's still getting paid, that's the thing that we all kind of also have to remember. Hey man, if he's making that money off that t-shirt deal, great. You know, hopefully we'll see him in a prominent role coming up, but
you know, yeah, that's the thing. But remember, you know, when LA Knight started getting hot and everybody was clamoring for him, it's kind of like this one with the Money in the Bank and whatever. And it was like they didn't have him win. Everybody was like, "Oh, LA Knight," and they didn't have him win. Yep. And now everybody wanted it, so they made sure they waited to give it to you, which is probably the same thing that's going to happen with Cross. Yeah, they could have him being Money in the Bank, and then the crowd thinks he's going to win, and he's not going to.
Right.
Because they aren't ready yet. They do everything on their time.
Right. And the other thing, too, that, you know, that is most frustrating to me about these people who say, well, it's predictable, it's boring, it's a... You got to remember, there are only X amount of top spots, you know? And right now, Cena has one of those, right? Once John's gone, next year, That's another spot.
And Jacob Fatu grabbed one, basically.
Oh, so. Yeah. You know, and then we get LA Knight versus Jeff Cobb.
Yeah.
Which, you know, what a first match.
It's amazing how, yeah. And it was funny because I was looking at some stuff and they were talking about, you know, because everybody's talking with the ID program and all the young wrestlers. And it's like Cobb's 42 and, you know, the rest of the bloodline, Tamatanga's like 40. Like all these guys are really getting their first breaks in the WWE in their late 30s, early 40s.
Which is one difference between Vince and Hunter, which, you know, Vince wouldn't have really been putting these guys. We saw what he did to Ricker, you know, make him a manager of models. Like, you know, so, you know, that's the one upside, I think. And, you know, again, you look at, you know, being able to keep alive stuff like the bloodline and look at the job Solo's done for the last year. It's incredible. You got Paul Heyman praising him on his job. So, you know, it's just, it's insane that, you know, all these people that we know and that we appreciate and love are in different places in the same company and all know what their jobs are. They all do their jobs to the best of their ability. And I think that that's one of the biggest things that you can say about everyone is that they took all their experiences and when they've gotten these opportunities, they make the best of them.
Well, that's what growth is about. And it's, you know, same thing with LA Knight. You know, here was a guy that looked like he might be on the verge of being released. The manager gimmick was terrible, you know, because they might have felt that at his age he wasn't going to break out. And he was basically just thrown in as fodder for Bray Wyatt. And then they made the mistake of giving him the opportunity to talk. And people were like, oh, this guy's great. It was like the day he walked in the FSW doors. The minute he talked, people were like, oh, shit, this guy can fucking talk.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden this guy's signing a multi-million-dollar deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And breaking and snapping into Slim Jims.
You know, I was that close to having him return at the Mecca, you know.
Ah. Yeah. Yeah. Wait, you still owe him though, don't you? You still owe him a payday.
Right? That's what he claimed. I'm trying to find the records.
Oh man. All right. 31st, what time is the
7 p.m. obviously on Triller. Yep. Like I said, the tag titles will be on the line. Duke will be there. I thought he was gonna be defending the title. Now we gotta figure out what's going on there. But, you know, Duke has been very dominant. But the whole MK Army is going to be in effect. Koa is making his return.
Yeah.
He'll be in a Cash in the Case qualifier.
Nice. He's been doing some great stuff in Arizona.
Yeah, he won their championship.
Yeah. So it's, you know, and that's the other thing too, man. You look at, you know, again, is we might not see them here for, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months. But if you look at what they're doing elsewhere, it's like, it's crazy to see that they, you know, you have all these guys who are so passionate about it, which is phenomenal to see them doing successful things wherever they're going. And I think that's,
well, yeah, you know, you got Class in Reno, they've been winning championships and, you know, we haven't used Class in a while because, you know, he's been, working on the Apple show Friends and Neighbors is John Hamm's stump double. So, you know, hopefully we'll get them back soon. But obviously the pressure of not FSW was wearing on them because the minute they've taken a break from FSW, they're winning championships everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty city in full effect.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still a little on that name, but you know,
hey.
Yeah.
It's no killer D's, you know what I'm saying?
You know, before we wrap up this week, one of the things that you know, happened this past week was there was a shooting at LVAC. This happened to be the same club that Maserati works at.
We saw that.
And luckily for Maz, she had a weekend of matches scheduled out of town, so she was not working when that happened, but she did lose a friend in that incident. So very heartfelt wishes to her and everyone who was affected by that. That's a gym I belong to and to go to, and just been in that location a couple times, and horrifying to see. And also, thank goodness, she was doing what she loved to do, and that saved her from having to be part of that experience and possibly worse. So
yeah, for sure. It's just horrible that you can't go anywhere. No. And it's like, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. So thoughts and prayers with everyone affected by that this week. All right, Joe, final thoughts before we wrap up.
Yeah. We got a little bit of time to relax, but the time to relax is making sure that everything is set for the anniversary show, June 15th, Silverton Casino. It's our Sweet 16. Danny Limelight and Ice Williams, 30-minute Ironman match for the heavyweight championship. Gypsy Mac and Brittany Brooks will be wrestling for the women's championship. Many people believe Brittany would have been champion by now, and she hasn't. So, this is a big opportunity for her. Tag titles will be on the line. Nevada State title is always the Nick Bockwinkel Memorial Battle Royal. And, of course, the Cash in the Case ladder match where you can challenge for any championship at any time. And we're going to be having some qualifying matches on May 31st for that. So May 31st, star-studded, pretty much, the main roster of top talent will be on hand. So check it out. Tickets on sale at Eventbrite for the 31st. And tickets... hit me up, or you can go to the Silverton website. They should be up by this weekend, and hopefully we can get that marquee going and, good to go. We're looking forward. Hopefully this is the biggest anniversary show ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And too bad. It's it would have been nice if the 16th would have fell on the 16th.
Yes. I just think that if we did it on Monday, nobody would be there.
That would have really thrown everyone a little bit, and probably questioned, did you have a stroke?
Maybe if we did our own Monday Night Raw and had Cross wrestle on it, then maybe that would bring people there. So it would be interesting on a Monday. I wonder.
I mean, which one would you do? No Escape on a Monday?
A lot of times the Mondays ends up being a holiday. So true. That could be something down the line might be interesting. But the idea, though, against running against Monday Night Raw, even though you can watch it at any time, there's a lot of those diehards that want to sit and watch it live. So,
yeah. Yeah. But, it's a Monday night, so you never know who shows up on the FSW casino show, right? That's
what I'm saying. We might be able to get a better deal for a Monday. I don't know.
Hey, Matt Riddle hasn't appeared in FSW in a long time, right?
Yeah, I messaged him one time, and, he follows us, and he worked for us, and never responded. So,
yeah.
Well, guess he don't like money. I don't know.
Well, I think he
knows the weed is legal in Vegas,
Joe, I think he likes money. I just don't think he likes DeFalco money.
Well, He's got to make me an offer. You know, guys at that level, they have their rate. Let me know what it is. But yeah, you're right. If somebody like that says, hey, I want 5,000, it's like, yeah, well, we're good. And that's what happens when you've made something in WWE. Some of these guys want some money that's, you know, far exceeds what I think the value is. So,
and I think it's funny that you almost said that's what happens when you make it in FSW, is because I think some of these guys do want money
that far exceeds. You know, we got some former FSW champions that have big contracts in the Fed. So,
Well, I was thinking about some of the guys who, you know, made it in FSW and now want that excess money from you.
You know, they all do. That's beside the point.
Oh, man. All right. That's going to do it for this week, everybody. You know, thank you for tuning in and joining us. And again, tune in May 31st. You know, we'll probably talk a little bit about it next week before the show. So until then, everybody, take care and happy wrestling. High stakes, ruthless game. Every move stokes the flame. Unyielding.